We are here with Sebastian Bach, formerly of Skid Row, and obviously doing a lot of his solo stuff. And Sebastian, it's great to be able to talk to you and talk about what you currently have going on. What's going on with you currently? And talk about the current happenings of Sebastian Bach and his band.
I have a new DVD called Apocalypse Now that is in stores, just got released, and it also has two CDs as a bonus. The DVD has three concerts on it, one from France, one from Los Angeles, and one from Belgium, and it came out really good. We just released a video, which is a live version of 18 in Life, that turned out killer. And you can go get the new DVD, Apocalypse Now, in stores now, or at Amazon or SebastianBach.com.
Now, I have to tell you, I really, really have always been impressed with anything that you've ever done. And I'm really impressed with these last couple solo albums that you've put out. To me, it's some of the best music that anybody's put out over the last few years. And, you know, the one thing that always bothers me, though, is I always turn on a radio and I hear 18 in Life and I Remember You and stuff. But it's like, you know, these solo albums really, in my opinion, don't get the recognition that I feel they should be getting.
It makes no sense to me. It's even more frustrating that my last record, Kickin' and Screamin', came in the Billboard chart like at 68 the first week on the top 200, which for a solo album from me is really good. That's the highest anybody in the band Skid Row has been on the Billboard chart in over 15 years. So, I mean, when people are going to store and buying an album, and you're on a Billboard chart next to, you know, Miguel and Adele, that's very frustrating, because then it's like, wait, what do I got to do? Like, but there's nothing I can't control other people. On the other side of the token, the internet is not all bad. The video for the song Kicking and Screaming has over a million views on YouTube, and a million views is a million views. I doubt any Skid Row video on MTV got played a million times. So people still know the new stuff. It's just a different way of hearing it. Like, radio is run by so few people. Like it's a national company, like Clear Channel or whatever, who programs radio. And 20 years ago, DJs had a say in what they played, and local towns didn't all have the same radio playlist as New York City or Los Angeles. It was like a different kind of media. But I can't control any of that. All I can do is make the best records I can, and when you put them in your iPod and you turn it up, you'll know that I'll never stop making new albums. That's what I like to do.
It seems a lot of more underground radio shows, say like myself, and there's a ton of other people like me that play the type of music that I do, that's not mainstream and it's not getting played nonstop. We're not playing hits, but it seems like shows that do this are gaining a much bigger following these days.
Well, I mean, I have two things to say about that. When people will say to me, why don't you get back with the old band? That's what people want and everything. And I'm like, okay, well, you're asking me to do something that was relevant 20 years ago. To me, without making a new album and just playing songs from 20 years ago is a ridiculous concept. When Skid Row came out in 89, we weren't doing songs from 1969. We were doing songs in 1989 that we wrote in 1988. Like, they were like brand new. We weren't playing 20-year-old songs then. So for someone to say to me now, why don't you get back with the old band and do those songs? I'm like, that's never what I ever did. I've always made a new record, gone on tour, and played it. Reason to change that. Another point I would make, like these classic radio stations that always just play the same five or six songs, like a song like Dream On by Aerosmith, when I was 13 or 12, meant so much to me. I would listen to that song and listen to the words, every time I look in the mirror, all these lines in my face getting clearer, the past is gone, it went by like dusk to dawn. I can remember being 12 or 13 listening to that going, how heavy and cool is this song? Now, I've heard it so many times that it doesn't have that meaning for me anymore. They just play the same song over and over and over. I don't need to hear Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd any more times in my life. I've heard it enough. I love it. It's great. But yeah. My dad used to play Pink Floyd Dark Side. When I was 7 years old, I would be listening to that album. I just turned 45 yesterday. It's like I've heard it enough. I have become comfortably numb. I've heard it enough. I don't need to hear it anymore. I've heard it enough. I don't get why programmers don't say, okay, Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd, great. Okay, there's another song on the record. Maybe we can play that one. Whatever. It's not out of my control. Totally out of my control.
Well, I want to talk about one of your solo albums, the album Angel Down. And I had Roy Z on the show, and he talked about how great it was working with you. And the other thing he talked about was how awesome Axl Rose was when he came down and actually sang on three songs, and how professional he was and how great he was in the studio. And talk about working with Roy, and talk about getting Axl to come down to do some tracks.
Yeah, working with Roy on Angel Down was an incredible experience because we're the exact same age. We're both the same, born in the same year, and if we were in school together, we would have been best buddies, me and Roy. He's very, very much into the metal, loves metal. And Axl came and sang my record, and that was astonishing. Nobody could believe that was happening. And he just came down and wailed. He did Love Is a Bitch Slap first, then he did Back in the Saddle, then he was about to go. And I go, dude, there's one more song I would love to hear you do. He's like, I already did two. I don't know, but the heaviest one on the record to me is Stuck Inside. And he said, okay. And then it's such a metal moment when he comes in on that song and it goes to the end and harmonizes with me. And it's just ridiculously heavy to me. I think he sounds like a demon on that song. It came out great. Really, really like it.
Axl Rose doesn't seem to have a lot of friends, at least in the public eye, but you and him are buddies, and you've gone on stage several times to sing songs with Guns N' Roses and even open for him. And what was it like to sing My Michelle on stage with him?
It's intense. It's very intense. He's had my solo band open for him many times, and I'm very thankful for that. The last time we played together was New Year's Eve in Las Vegas, two nights at the Joint, and he's just a great friend. He's a really good guy. I just spent Thanksgiving with him last Thanksgiving, and he's a close friend, definitely.
I want to get back to the live album and the DVD, Sebastian, because I really love the way this thing is laid out. I love the sound. I think the band sounds great, and how did this whole entire tour go for you, the one that you obviously recorded these shows on?
I've been touring all my life, and this summer we did all the festivals in Europe, Download, Sweden Rock, Hellfest, and I'm very lucky to be able to do that. Two of the concerts were recorded with 72 track digital recording equipment, fully professionally captured. France and Los Angeles shows, which meant that we could go in the studio and make them sound as perfect as we wanted in post-production. One of the shows was filmed in Grasspop in Belgium, and that was only filmed and recorded on two channels, so we weren't allowed to overdub anything or fix anything. It's just a completely live show. And that's actually my favorite one to watch. But the other two concerts are part of the CD, double CD bonus that comes with the DVD. So they're very perfect musically. But the one at Grasspop is not perfect. We're like playing in the rain, and it's very humorous to watch because I'm in a really rotten mood and I'm trying to get out of it with humor. And it's quite entertaining to watch.
You did some work on Broadway, and which is obviously a little bit different than singing in a rock and roll band. And did doing work on Broadway basically give you different ideas or give you a different approach to, say, singing on stage?
A big thing about rock and roll, I don't know if the fans realize it. For me, my whole career, one of my challenges is when I get on the rock and roll stage, a lot of the times it's just too loud. It's so, because if I'm playing like a smaller venue, like a club or something, which I don't really like playing at this age, but if I'm like standing like a half a foot away from the drum kit, I can't really compete volume wise with a drum kit. Drums are really loud. So when you ask me, vocally, what do I do or whatever, I'm not a typical heavy metal singer. I'm more of a pop singer. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm saying the way that I sing is closer to Steve Perry from Journey than Cannibal Corpse. It's a different vocal style that I'm singing. And if I just run up and shout and yell, it doesn't sound like Sebastian Bach and making a record. So I can't even remember what your question was, but what was it? Something about singing.
Oh, about you did the Broadway stuff, and did that change, maybe?
Oh, yeah, that just helped out my pitch, because there's no drum kit behind me. There's no big amps or anything. It's just the voice, so it's a lot easier to hear what I'm doing. When I did the play Jesus Christ Superstar, it has a lot of high notes, high screams, and I hadn't been doing that for a while. And when I did the Jesus Christ Superstar play, I was forced to hit these super high screams that Ted Neely hit in the movie. This is like the year 2002. We're coming out of the grunge era, and in the mid 90s, late 90s, I didn't think anybody wanted to hear me sing good. Like, it was a lot of shouting and screaming and yelling. But then when I did Jesus Christ Superstar, I was forced to hit these really high screams and that I hadn't hit in a couple of years. I didn't think it was cool anymore to do that. And then when I trained my voice again to sing that high, and I hit those high screams, I realized that it's the coolest thing in the world. Just to be able to do that is an amazing feeling for me as a singer and for the audience, like to look at their faces when I'll hit a really high scream. So how did Broadway help my singing? It helped my pitch a lot, and it helped me realize that I shouldn't be basing my vocals on Cookie Monster. I should be Sebastian Bach, and that is the voice that I was born with and that I have in my throat, and I'm lucky to be able to scream like that. So that's what I would say Broadway taught me.
Well, you know, one of the things with me, and a lot of singers and musicians, they approach things so much better when they get older. I know for myself that I feel that I do, but you know, I think vocally you approach things a lot better these days than you did in the past.
Okay, I really appreciate you saying that. I've always tried my best in the studio. You know, when I was doing 18 in Life, and I remember I was 20 years old when I did Kicking and Screaming. I was 42 or 43. So that's a long time in between, you know, records there. So I'm very lucky to be able to do this. Now, I read from Apocalypse Now on Blabbermouth, some fans were saying, "Have we overdubbed, you know, the vocals on this?" And I'm like, okay, number one, why would you have a recording studio at the concert if you weren't going to make the recording sound good? I don't understand the point of having a truck there with all these tracks of music if you're not going to make it sound good. I mean, I don't think that's bad. Number two, just if I go into the studio and overdub a line in a live concert where I'm running around on the stage, I'm still singing it. I'm still the guy standing behind the microphone singing the song. And the fact that I can still make that melody come out of my mouth, I don't care if I'm doing it in a studio or I'm doing it live. I'm just still doing it.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm still making that sound come out of my mouth. So to me, I'm lucky that I can still do a song like 18 in Life in the key that it was written, and I'm not making it, you know, down-tuned or not changing melody around. I'm singing it the same way as it was sang in the first album, so I consider myself lucky that I can even still do that.
I loved watching the Supergroup show that was on VH1, and what was it like for you to work with some of those musicians that you were on that show with?
This show was a lot more fun to film than to watch. I don't drink anymore. I think my biggest thing I learned about Supergroup was that a little drinking goes a long way when you're filming a television show. You don't have to be that drunk to come across as really, really drunk. So, I mean, I guess it has to do with the fact that they'll replay the same scene, you know, 1,000 times a week. But that was more fun to film than to watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Did you like jamming with those guys on that show?
We didn't really jam that much. I didn't understand why you got Ted Nugent, Sebastian Bach, Scotty, and Jason Bonham, and Evan Seinfeld all in a band, but the idea of the band is to do cover songs. I completely didn't get that. None of us do cover songs. Ted Nugent has Ted Nugent songs, Sebastian. I got my songs, Scott's got his songs. I didn't understand why I was like a bad guy because I wanted to make new songs. I thought that's the reason that we are in a band. So when you're watching, it's like, Sebastian, he's so hard to deal with, he's hard to work with. I don't really get off on doing cover songs. I don't find it inspiring. I don't find it challenging. I find it boring. I don't find it exciting at all. I find it exciting to, like, if me and Ted were to sit down and he's got a Ted Nugent riff and then I come up with a melody and put some words to it, to me that's interesting. But you know, they wanted to do Ace of Spades and Led Zeppelin, and I'm like, okay, well, that's easy. Let's do a Motorhead song. Yippee.
Gotcha.
I don't get it.
Well, it was great. It's great to be able to hear you make music again, man, because I remember you had that solo EP that came out, you know, like 14, 15 years ago, Bring It Back Alive. And then I heard Angel Down. There were so many years between that. Angel Down comes out, and I'm completely blown away. And obviously with Kicking and Screaming, too.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you like it. I did a solo record called Bring 'Em Back Alive in 99 with 5 new songs, but it was live. And then I did a DVD, The River Wild. So definitely Angel Down was like my first full solo studio record. And I'm working on another one right now, believe it or not, that'll be coming your way soon.
Awesome.
Sooner rather than later.
Well, it's like these two solo albums have the old school influences, but still sound a bit modern.
Well, you know, people have said that about Kicking and Screaming. Basically, what that album is like 2012 production values and recording sensibilities. The way we recorded that, obviously, we recorded in 2012, not 1988. But my voice is its own instrument, and my voice will always sound like me. So you're hearing like the classic sound of my voice produced in 2012 recording sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a unique sound.
Well, it's great to have you on my show again, Sebastian. It's been a very long time, and do you have any last words that you want to say to the listeners that are going to be checking out this interview?
I would say to the fans that if you go to the store and get Apocalypse Now, you're going to get a package that is very high quality. The photos, the booklet, the DVD, the CDs, it's a very high quality release from Frontiers Records and myself that can stand up to anything I've ever put out. And when I got the finished product in my hand, I was very happy to see the quality of all of it. And that means a lot to me. It's very much exactly what I wanted to create, and the record company did a great job, and I really want the fans to check it out, definitely.
You know, one more question. Are things different for you nowadays as opposed to 20 or 25 years ago when you started out?
Well, that's a very vague question, but I will answer it. One big difference that I would say that's an obvious difference for me is that 20 years ago, the schedule of a rock band was we would go on tour for a year, then we would take a year off and write songs, and then record a new record, and then go on tour for a year, and then take a year off and write songs that come with a new record. We did that from 1988 till 1995. Nowadays, there's no time off. I have not stopped moving or doing things in, I can't remember how long. I'm always playing a show. I'm always doing an interview. I'm always doing a TV show. I'm always doing a record. I don't know whether that's better or worse, but it would be cool to have some time off sometime. Be careful what you wish for. Actually, you know what? I take that back. I don't want to put that out into the universe. It's great being busy all the time. Okay, awesome.